you. I'm Joni. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is May 8th of 1993, and Midtown is my home group. I am very excited to be here. First, sometimes getting up and doing anything like this, I get that initial nervousness, and then I remember it's not about me. And I get that, oh, well, what am I nervous about? Oh, it's, and I have to realize, okay, I am an alcoholic. There's a reason I'm here. I'm not talking about, you know, something I don't know about. I'm talking about myself. So I can do this, and it's also not about me and what I look like and what I'm wearing. I just come back to that and remember that I need to do this to remember who I am and why I'm here, and also to pass it on and to give someone else hope that there is a solution that should show what I've been through. I know that I really appreciate Billy had come up to our group not too long ago and spoke, and it was so wonderful hearing his story and just having people that love Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't something that I looked for when I first came in here. I'm going to get to go to AA one day. I'm going to grow up and be a good AA member. It was not something I was aspiring to be, and actually aspiring to be a good alcoholic, and maybe I'll be a bartender, or maybe, you know, these were my, I'll be 21. Actually, that was my goal in life, was to be 21. I thought, once I'm 21, I can walk in anywhere and have whatever I want. So that was my goal in life. That's where I was coming from. So to be here, and now I have different things that I have passions about, and I do. I appreciate being around people who want to live in the solution and want to be here, because I know this is a life and death thing for me, and it's not just because I've decided to be good and I'm just going to go to AA meetings and be a great moral person. It wasn't from that I started. So I will tell you a little bit about myself and what how I got here and what has happened. Just a little background. I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, so not that far away, but close, you know, outside of Washington, D.C., and it was a nice neighborhood. You couldn't have said anything about my family. I didn't actually have alcoholism in my immediate family, so it wasn't, you know, their fault. I couldn't blame it on someone right away, so didn't have anything like that. But there was something where, now, a lot of people talk about how they didn't feel right from the beginning. And I didn't notice that I didn't feel right. I wasn't one of those people that says nothing was right from the beginning. I just thought that other people maybe felt the same way that I did. But I knew that there are certain things that if someone looked at me wrong or said something wrong, I'd run off and go to my room and, you know, cry. Not in front of people, but I'd just go and hide, and, you know, people had wronged me because they, you know, they laughed at me, and I know they were laughing at me. You know, just it started with little things like that where, you know, I know that they'd, you know, I was out in Duck Duck Goose, and that's just, oh, no, you know, whatever it was. I mean, just really big problems of the day. So I just was a little sensitive and from the start, and I know I'm the youngest of seven kids, my mom, so I had a big family, and it was not... same thing, nothing specifically wrong. I just saw my older brothers and sisters did drink, and I did see, like, I saw the two different sides, where I saw, okay, this is something the adults do. It looks fun, and they're hanging out, they look comfortable and relaxed, maybe, you know, something I'll get to do later. But I also go to school and hear this, stay away from drugs, just say no, and, you know, alcohol and drugs are bad. And so I hear this talk and just kind of would go in there and it would register. But I do remember, like, my one brother walking around, he was on his 21st birthday and he tore his shirt off and he's like, I'm 21. You know, that's maybe part of my goal of being 21. And it just seemed so cool. He was walking around and I'm a man. And so I could see how, you know, oh, that looks kind of fun. So we had, this goes part into my story later, where my mom had a refrigerator downstairs that was, you'd usually have some alcohol in it, and there was different alcohol downstairs in the closets downstairs, and as my brothers and sisters, there's a big gap between me and one brother and then the rest of them. And so they were a lot older, and they went off to college, they came back, but my mom would keep some alcohol downstairs. And that proved very useful later. what happened was I didn't actually drink as early as some people that I got sober with, because, you know, getting sober young, oh, maybe you started really, really young. Well, I actually didn't start really young compared to some people. I was a junior in high school, and I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and I went to this dance. Well, we would have these dances where we would invite men from the boys from the boys' school, and we would buy the alcohol and get ready for the pre-party and after-party, get everything all ready. And I bought alcohol, so I said, okay, I'm going to get alcohol for my date. And then my date said, well, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm driving. I have this car, that new car. And I hadn't even had a drink. And I said, wait, but I paid for this alcohol. Somebody's got to drink it. So I guess my first drink I had was because I'm stingy. I don't know, because I'm cheap. So that was my first, because I said, you know, if someone's got to drink this alcohol, I paid for it. So I had some, and I started with wine coolers. And I immediately thought, this is just fruit juice. You know, why is everyone saying just say no or alcohol is bad? This is nothing. This is just fruit juice. So I was drinking, and I had that alcoholic attitude from the first drink. It just, as it says in the book, definitely where, you know, gone beyond recall. You know, I went immediately from that first drink. I hadn't even finished one, and I looked over at the girl next to me, and she looked all silly, and she had even less than I had. I said, what's wrong with her? I can drink more than she can. And I hadn't drank before, so I don't know where I had this attitude of, you know, come on, you know, you can't hold your liquor at all, can you? And so I just had this immediate, I didn't know that that was the answer, you know, oh, I've been hurting all along, and this is my magic answer. I just knew, wow, I want, all I'm going to talk about is when I can get that. I want as much of that as possible, as soon as possible. I don't care who's there, but we just need to make sure alcohol is in the picture. And so very soon I was talking to people about, okay, when's the next time we're going to get some? Where are we going? How are we getting it? And I wanted to plan the next party. And where I was in high school, a lot of people would talk about the party on the weekend. And very quickly that became way too long to wait. I could not talk, you know, Monday morning, waiting till Friday night, that is way too long to wait. So I found this stash in my parents' basement of, there's some, you know, liquor and beer in there. And so I would go downstairs and get usually just a, you know, six-pack of beer or something and bring it upstairs to my room. Now, my bedroom was right next door to my parents, right next to my parents' bedroom. And there's a bathroom in the hallway, so it wasn't always the best situation. But I would just be chugging the beer. And I don't know how, with different friends that I had, but I had these tapes, these Walkman and tapes, and my friends would make mixed tapes. So they would say, oh, we're going to make, you know, some different music. And my music always happened to be this very depressing songs all together on one, you know, it's like nobody knows what it's like, well, like Behind Blue Eyes, nobody knows what it's like, poor me, you know, no one understands me, and all these songs were just the world does not understand me and poor me. So I would just sit there, put the music on, drink the bottle, and just, you know, look at it and just kind of caress the bottle and say, you're my only friend. You're the only one who understands me, and really talk to the beer bottle and really feel like that bottle was really the only one who truly got me. I knew that alcohol understood me, but no one else in the world did. And so I would talk to my only friend, and sometimes I have to go in the bathroom, throw up, and come back and talk more to my friend. Then I would be at the next day at school, sometimes on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and someone would say to me, you know, what were you doing? We're just talking, and I would slip out maybe some information on something I did last night, and they said, you did what? On a Tuesday night? What were you doing? And I soon saw that not everybody was doing this in school. Now, so I little by little saw, ooh, maybe that's not a good thing to share with these people, and let's... Maybe not everyone's doing that. I don't understand why everyone is not, because I didn't understand that they had a different reaction to alcohol. But I knew that I wanted what was in there, and I completely understood, you know, that alcohol understood me. So so little by little, I would go to these, you know, different parties. I, you know, would not go to the best places where, you know, places that would let in, you know, high school. school juniors would be the places with appealing wallpaper and, you know, really smoky and dingy. And, you know, I was like, oh, I've made it. Look, you know, it's just these places that I thought were wonderful. And I've got to this point where I would go up to a place and bang on the bar and say, give me the strongest thing you have. And they'd give me something, and I'd think, that's not strong enough, come on. And from how I was as a kid, I was completely shy. I mean, even people, there's someone who knew me in AA, and she knew me in high school, and she said, you said about two words in high school. I would never talk. I was petrified of people. And give me that alcohol, and I'd be going up to people, and come on, that's not strong enough, give me more. And I just had this attitude and outlook and life will change, you know, but it really had this feeling like I could face the world and I could look people in the eye and I could do things. But, of course, there are problems with it because alcohol would start affecting me and all of a sudden I might be looking people in the eye but add a little punch with it or something. And that's not always the best way to handle situations. So I had in my high school, many different things happened. And one thing, at the end of high school, we had a beach week, as people call it, senior week. They go out to the Ocean City, Maryland, and go to the beach for all week after you graduate. And my parents had a beach house in Bethany Beach, Delaware. And so I thought, Mom, Dad, could we stay with our friends at the house all week? You know, it'd be good to be at our house, be safe. And they said, well, you know, no boys and no alcohol at the house. Oh, of course. You know, just that. And I had worked on this look, this innocent look. I tried to fine-tune this, you know, very helpful for teachers and parents, and just kind of work on this. You know, even like I remember in grade school many times, it wasn't me as I'm kicking the other kid under the table. Not me. And then, the poor kid, oh, Joni did this. Not Joni. She wouldn't. I'm like, no, it wasn't me. So I had worked on things like this, these things that were helpful later. But so I tried to do this with my parents and convinced them, of course, no, we wouldn't do anything. And I just remember packing for that week, and I do not remember packing a bathing suit. I just remember going down in the basement, in my parents' basement, and just looking through dusty bottles and just throwing them in paper bags, just as much as I could get. I was just throwing all these. And I talked to everyone else who was coming, and I said, make sure you're bringing your stash. Do you have your alcohol? Do you have yours? Making sure everyone was going to bring some, because I was afraid there wouldn't be enough. And we got there, and I just had this theme of, as soon as I get everyone out of my way, and as soon as I have as much alcohol as I want, then I'll be okay. I'll be free. And, you know, I can't wait. So I thought, this is it. You know, here we have a week, and I'm just going to be able to have as much alcohol as possible. This is going to be wonderful. And I got there, and some of the other people had different ideas. Now, I'm sure that they also intended on partying and having some fun, but maybe they thought they'd go on the beach some. You know, I definitely didn't have that idea. So I just was, yeah, we're here, you know, just drink. And so a lot of people, and this is also something that happened throughout my drinking over and over, where people who I felt like were my friends, my peers, kept looking at me with these looks and asking me, you know, what is wrong with you? And I just didn't understand what was wrong with them, really. So they would say things to me like, you know, you really should have a drinking partner, have someone to drink with you. And I said, okay, well, you'll be my drinking partner. And you're done, so you'll be my drinking partner, and you'll be my drinking partner. I just was like, oh, I'm so clever. And they said, you know, you really should have one drink per one drink. And so this would be your drink, a shot, and this would be my drink, you know. So I just would like, haha, see, I'm one drink. And I just was always trying and outsmart them. And I would see, I'm you know, going along with their rules. And I remember one time that week, I remember them taking me to a party, and I just kept having shot after shot, you know, of something. And we went to a party with some other people, and I literally, by the time I had gotten to this party, I went to go give the host a hug, and I fell at his feet. And then my friends left me there. They just, you know, they were probably really excited. Yay, she's out of our hands now. And I remember getting sick for a while after that in the bathroom there, and actually trying to hook up with that guy too. Then, you know, excuse me. Hi, don't I look attractive? You know, it's just, and I remember him just, you know, stay away from me. Why doesn't he want to be with me? I don't understand. Is it my breath? I had situations like that all the time where, you know, people just didn't understand me. And so that was one thing. And also that week, I remember one time where I just kept drinking and drinking and having different things. And I felt like nothing could quiet my head. And I just had so much going on and just so much I was thinking about. And I just kept trying to drown it out. And if you think about what were really the problems of that day, and, you know, probably nothing big, but to me, my head was so loud, and so I kept trying to drown it, and it seemed like nothing was working, and so I decided at 4 in the morning to go out rollerblading in my neighborhood in Bethany Beach, and some people that were still awake, that weren't passed out, they said, you know, what are you doing going out this hour? And I said, well, you know, I just need to go somewhere. And I love doing that a lot of times when I was drinking. You know, no one's going to miss me anyway. I'm just going to go, wander off, go somewhere. So I went rollerblading, and they said, well, we're going to come find you if you're not back within, you know, 10 minutes or so. And sure, whatever. So I went off, and I just, this just shows my perception being off a little bit. I thought, you know, this alcohol isn't affecting me at all. I'm so, you know, clear-headed. I'm going down, and I see this cop car in the distance, and, you know, like, oh, maybe I should get back. I'll just do a little bit more, go around. All of a sudden, the cop car is behind me. So something, you know, something's off a little bit there in my head, you know, that a little fuzzy. But all of a sudden, the cop lights go on behind me. So I dive into the bush. I'm gonna escape him. He won't see me. So I dive into the bush, and he comes out with his flashlight, and he says, "Man, get in the car." So I sit in his car. And I'm thinking, oh, no, you know, how am I going to get out of this? And I just remembered some people saying, you know, if you put a penny in your mouth, you know, then they can't, when they breathalyze you, it won't work. You know, people would try little tricks, certain things that they'd say. So I was digging in my pockets for change, trying to maybe slip a penny in my mouth. So I said, what do you have in your pocket? I said, money. You know, just being smart, you know, just with that attitude. And then he started calling into the station about me. And I said, why are you calling me? And I'm not doing anything wrong. And he even asked me, what are you doing out here? And I had the story ready. You know, couldn't sleep. A lot of us were up really late. And I'm not that good at rollerblading. And I was so afraid with a lot of cars in the road. And he was just, you know, nice night. And I had the story ready for him. And then my friends came around the corner. And I said, see? I told you my friends were going to come get me. So I felt like, ha-ha, I got him. And I thought, now actually I thought this 10 years probably into sobriety, that I got him at that point. Like, ha-ha, I tricked him. He never asked me about my drinking. I got off. But I found out later from one of the friends that was there at that beach house that he followed us back to the house. And he came to the door and he said, you know, just keep an eye on her. You know, he knew something was going on. So he just said to my friends, because all I remembered after that is that they had hid all the alcohol. And I was very upset because they took my alcohol and hid it. Now, of course, I drank all their alcohol first because I was saving my alcohol to make sure I had enough. So, but that they can't take away my alcohol. I mean, I brought this alcohol. It's my alcohol. So I was very upset with them. And they were very upset with me. And the one girl who I still talk to sometimes today, and she actually didn't, I don't think she even drank that whole week. But she was really worried about me. And I thought at the time, because my parents confronted me and they said, you know, you need to go see a psychiatrist and we need to talk about your drinking. They found out some things about that week. And my friend turned me in. How could she do that? And it turned out that same thing. She was talking to her mom, and she was really worried about me. She said some things going on. You know, I'm really worried about her. And her mom didn't believe her. No, not Joni. Same thing. No, she wouldn't do that. And she said, no, look. And, you know, she's telling her this happened and this happened, telling her all these different stories from that week. And so that's her mom confronted my mom, and I had to go see a psychiatrist that summer. And I also was kicked off my driving that summer. I'd been driving only for a year, and I'd already had two accidents in my first year. Now, I wasn't even drinking while I had those accidents, but that just, I couldn't live life without alcohol. I was a little speed demon, and I was, you know, trying to do everything fast and go around, you know, corners too fast. And someone, I remember people screaming in my car. Actually, that happened well into sobriety, unfortunately, I have to admit. People literally screaming in my car because they were afraid for their life. And I just, the only thing that stopped that was one time when I was in the car with someone and I was afraid for my life. I was like, oh, this is what people feel like in the car with me. Okay, you know, it kind of clicked. And so I was kicked off my driving that year. And I had to go see a psychiatrist. It was, dude, what an awful summer. I just thought, oh, this is terrible. But then I got to go off to college that fall. And so, yay. Once again, nobody knows me. I'm free. I can go off to school. And I'm so excited, you know. And so I went off to school. And there's, you know, the orientation week before you go to school. And people getting to know each other. And there was a concert during that week, and so, oh, I want to go to the concert, and just let these people go to the concert. Well, you know how with concerts, alcohol costs way too much money, so you are not going to just wait to have the alcohol at the concert. You have to have as much as you can before then, and I drank a lot before then, and even had one of those plastic cups that has the straw, you know, and I filled it with alcohol, and I tended to wonder, you know, with alcohol, I loved grain alcohol straight out of the bottle, because I thought, first of all, why do people put umbrellas? Why do they put fruit juice in there? Why do they even have a glass? You know, just get it out of the bottle. And I also had this feeling of, if it's really burning as it's going down, it's really working. It's like medicine. It's like, you know, it's going to work faster, and I need it now. So that was my theme of drinking. So I went and I had one of those cups and, you know, pure alcohol in it. And I was just trying to drink as much as possible, and, you know, you're drinking a lot. You know, I was just having a lot to drink, so I had to go to the bathroom. So I went to one of those porta-johns out in front of the concert, and I dropped my drink in there. And I needed to get it out, because I needed it. That was the only thing that was going to get me through the concert. So I went and got it out of the porta-john and proceeded to drink it. And I'm sure the little top was on the top. That's what I'm saying to myself. I'm like, it must have been. So I was like, nothing could have got in there, and I wiped it off. But to me, it was like someone who had just been, you know, bitten by a poisonous snake, and that's the only antidote, and it's going down there. Oh, no, you're going to die. That's really how I felt. You know, it's like, if alcohol spilled on the floor, you know, lifted it up, some cigarette butts, just, you know, spit them out. You know, I think it was also because I couldn't get alcohol that easily all the time. I thought, oh no, you know, this is my only way of getting it. And I did, that was one I did know, don't tell anybody. No, I didn't know I'd share that later to Amy, but I knew at the time, okay, this is not one of those that your roommates and other people here need to know. But I then went back, you know, many different things going on at that school. But before orientation, that orientation week was even over, this guy that I had met in my little orientation group, he said to me, I made an appointment for you at the Center for Alcohol and Drug Assistance tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. And I thought, once again, these are my peers. People are supposed to drink in college. What are you talking about? So someone had already turned me in, and oh, no. So I went because some people were already giving me those, what is wrong with you? What's going on? So I said, I'm just go, you know, get people off my back. And actually, there's a little bit more to that story with that guy. But I was interested in this guy and said, okay, I'm going to please him. And so I went to this this counselor, this alcohol counselor, and she was probably the first person that did not say to me, you know, what is wrong with you? Why do you do this? I was getting that from everybody, and she just started talking to me and saying, oh, tell me about this guy. Do you like him? And tell me how it is at school. How's it going with your people in the hall and roommates? And somebody was actually interested in talking to me. Okay, I can deal with this. And she would just slip information about alcoholism in. You know, oh, we're here. It's an alcoholism counselor meeting. We have to just kind of go over some information about alcoholism. And I actually saw her that whole freshman year of college, and I would, you know, listen sometimes, and I definitely was intrigued, like, wait, that sounds just like me. No, that's not. And she would say things about trying to suggest maybe you could try and go control your drinking when you go out next time, and And I thought, yeah, I can control it. And she would suggest putting, like, here's the coin thing again. She'd say, put some coins in one pocket and move them over to the other pocket each time you have a drink so you can see how many drinks you have and come tell me. And I would always come back to her saying things like, oh, well, I needed the money for something. So I had to spend it. You know, I couldn't count. And, so I always had to pretend to myself that I don't really have that, you know, a problem. There's nothing really going on. And enough things happened over that year that I was, you know, kind of broken down, it almost felt like, where, you know, maybe something's going on. And I remember even writing, in a journal, that deep poetry in the middle of the night, those crazy, inspiring thoughts that we have, that, you know, if anyone discovered this, oh my, you know, when I was drinking, deep thoughts. But so I was writing things, well, maybe I'm an alcoholic, so what? You know, I was writing. And I thought, you know, who cares? Because to me, I really didn't see what it was like without alcohol. Alcohol was my only friend, my only solution for living. I couldn't show up for life. I couldn't do things otherwise. So how could I not drink? And so I thought, you know, oh, well, other people don't know that this is the only way I can live. And this is just how it's going to be the rest of my life. I just had something in me thinking that. And this woman was trying to convince me. Otherwise, she's like, just go to an AA meeting. And I remember going to an AA meeting in October before I got sober the following May. And I remember hearing the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I thought, well, I don't want to stop drinking. What? You know, that's where I just took it. Like, of course I don't want to stop drinking. I love drinking. And that's all I kind of took from that. But I didn't see the solution. So for me, she had suggested at the end of the school year, you know, you really, you know, why don't you go to this rehab, this alcohol and drug rehab? And I said, well, you know, last summer was pretty miserable with a whole psychiatrist and getting kicked off my insurance. I couldn't drive and going home to another summer with the parents watching me. Oh, maybe this will be like summer camp. You know, that was where I went in my head. So I went to my summer camp rehab. I went there, and I even said to the counselor, I said, well, I don't have to stop drinking, do I? She's like, well, maybe. A lot of people go to rehab and they stop drinking, but, you know, whatever. And she was just one, just go. She tried to do anything to get me there. So I remember going there and thinking that, the only, you know, like summer camp. I could just, you know, play sports. It was May. It was up in Pennsylvania, this rolling hill. It was a beautiful place. So I thought, it'll be summer camp and just talk to the guys and play sports. Oh, this is great. And then they told me, you know, there are treatment plans here. You have to do these things. You need to stay a little bit longer. They were telling me, sorry, you can't just have fun here. But I do remember two things happening there where it was a good rehab in the sense they gave a big book to everybody. They had meetings every day. They would take us to meetings or have meetings there. And they basically didn't pretend like this is the solution. Like rehab is, we're going to teach you all the answers. They were showing that AA is the solution, but, you know, we'll push you on to AA. And I remember seeing some people there because I was 18 at the time, and I thought, you know, try to use that angle of, no, you know, I have so much of my life ahead of me, and I'm too young. And I saw some people that were even younger than me who were excited about being sober and happy about it. And I did not think the two could go together. I did not see sobriety and happiness. I just didn't think the two could go together. So there was something about that intrigued me about those people. I thought, there's something there. And I heard some of them tell their stories, and they're similar, and they had some of the same feeling. But I don't know. And that was one thing that got me. And then the other thing was that there was some sense of, you know, there's a solution. You know, they're offering this hope and solution that there was maybe another way of living without alcohol. So I was kind of heard that, but I'm not sure. So I got through that treatment center, and they send you off home. And I know that I remember they tried to encourage me to go to, you know, halfway house, and no, I'm not going to do that. I still had my stubbornness in me. I'm going home to my parents' house. My parents' house is fine. And I said, I'm going back to that same school too next fall. I had my thing set of what I was going to do. And so they tried to encourage me otherwise. But I did go home to my parents' house, and I started going to meetings. They did have me set up with this aftercare. You have to go to these certain meetings, and you do have to get a sponsor. So they signed a sponsor down where I lived, and so I did a little bit of that. You know, went to these aftercare groups, and my parents were. I mean, my parents, first of all, had cleared all alcohol out of their house, so they're not drinkers. So I was like, darn, you know. So they did that, and not that they had to, but so they just, I think, for their own sake and their sanity. They got everything out of the house, and they were basically taking me to these meetings. I felt a little bit trapped too. You know, I have to go to these meetings and doing. And I just started going to these meetings right by their house. I was just going, okay, I'll just check it off. You know, come right home. And I thought, okay, you know, I'm 18 years old. I've had all the fun in life. Poor me. You know, just this is my prison sentence for the rest of my life. You know, that's really how I felt. You know, I've been punished now because of the things that I've done, and I've had fun, and I have to do this. And so they started taking me, and I remember meeting this a couple different people, and they said, oh, we're going to this young people's meeting tomorrow night. Why don't you come with us? And, oh, no, it's okay. I'm going right to this meeting over here. You know, I already have a meeting I'm going to. So, no, thanks. And they said, oh, well, our friend Rachel is going to be there. You'll meet her. Okay. I just took a note of that. And then my parents, I think, were getting tired of taking me to meetings all the time. And they knew that maybe I could get rides home. And this one meeting where I met Rachel was literally, like, across the street in the neighborhood. So I don't think they were too worried. And they said, you know, you can get a ride home tonight. So I think they were trying to push me out to some other people. And after the meeting, during announcement time, this woman, Rachel, made an announcement. She said, we just had the International Conference of Young People in AA called ICKYPA, and we just went to New York and had a fabulous time, and we're going to try and bid for it again. Maybe it'll come to D.C. So she was very enthusiastic and excited about being sober, and we're doing this and that, and come join us. And so she was sharing about this, and after the meeting, I was looking around. I need to ask someone for a ride. I'm scared to talk to anyone. So I went up and talked to her, and first of all, the other person said they knew Rachel. Okay, so all the connections. And so I went up to her, and I said, what is ICKYPA? Can you give me a ride? And that's probably exactly how I said it. No, I'm just so nervous. And, yes, I can give you a ride, and let me tell you all about ICKYPA and all these things we're doing. And she gave me a ride, and I remember her chain smoking, and she had a pickup truck, and she was chain smoking and telling me all about what was going on. Oh, you can come to this with me, and we'll go to do this. And I'd gone right back into that petrified, I'm not going to talk to anybody, I'm afraid of everything and everybody. And you know, I did have that, just paste a smile on your face, and I'll say I'm an alcoholic, and don't look like anything's wrong, because then no one will come near you. So, you know, okay, great, okay. And so she just, oh, we'll do this, we'll do that, and okay, sure. And it was perfect for me because it was someone who just wanted to scoop me up and take me with them. And I didn't have a big social calendar at that time. No one wanted to do anything with me. And so I just said yes to her. And that's, you know, the first magic is that I just was willing but didn't really, and I didn't really think about what I was doing by saying okay. So I said okay to her. She said, I'll come pick you up tomorrow. We'll come do this. Okay. And I started following her around, and I didn't see that all of a sudden we're doing activities. We're going to meetings. I remember one of the first meetings she took me to was a pretty small meeting, and there were other meetings at that same church. And so, okay, this small meeting, and I don't think I even shared, but I was just worried, okay, watching some people, that's okay, you know, not too many people. And then after the meeting, we went to this diner that all the people from the meeting, the different groups, were there. And I went, whoa, you know, all these people are here. And I remember even this, there was a partition, like this glass partition. I was looking through, almost like peering through the glass. I don't think I can talk to all those people. And so she sat at the table with me and talked to me and just said, don't worry, you know, you don't have to take it all in at once. And just, you know, don't worry about the whole future, you know, just let's just start with the steps. And she just kind of sat me down, let's just read the first step and go over it. So she got me started right away with the steps, and she tricked me into service too. She said, well, we're gonna go to this meeting early. We're gonna pick up chairs here. We're gonna do this, and she did a lot of things like that. Where come over to my house early, and she also, I remember a lot of times she tricked me into making dinner because I didn't know how to cook. One time, I remember she made me tomato soup on the stove and grilled cheese. And I'm like, wow, top cooking. I mean, I was about cereal and sandwich level. That was about what I could do. Oh, use the stove. Wow, the thing turns on. It's amazing. And so she would trick me into cooking things, and she would say, oh, well, I'm just doing this over here. Could you fix that? And this is how you do it. And I would have cooked like a whole meal. Like, wait a minute, she just got me. I know how to make that meal now. So it just little by little, there are certain things that she showed me how to do. And so she was my first sponsor, and she. I mean, I really felt like I did not know any skills for living. I remember her showing me what a checkbook was. This is a checkbook. This is how you use it. Here's the, you know, employment section. Here you can find one of these and these numbers, and here's the phone. This is what you say. I just really felt like I had no skills for living, and I was petrified. I didn't know how to live without alcohol. And I tried to go back 3 months sober. I was in this group of people, so it was people with Midtown who were excited about being sober. There were activities all the time, and it was this kind of surrounded with this cushion of fellowship. So all these people were having fun and not drinking. So I thought, you know, I'm just kind of rolling along with them. I was, you know, doing the steps, starting to do the steps. Just, okay, you know, what am I doing tomorrow? We're all going here. So it almost seemed kind of easy, and it flowed. And so I was 3 months sober, and I thought, well, I've got to go back to that school where I went for my freshman year, because everybody goes to school. You know, if you start, you're going to start at a college, you just go there for 4 years. That's what you do, right? So things stubborn in my head of this is just what I have to do. And that was 3 hours away that I had to go. So I went away to this school, and some people were discouraging in different ways, or they're making sure, you know, they basically would say, you know, I do have a sponsor up there, you know, make sure you get connected in the meetings up there, giving me everything that they could. You know, it's not that you can't be sober somewhere else, but just, you know, work on the connections. So I did. I got a sponsor up there. I got meetings, and then yeah, I remember going up there, and she's like, this is what's going to happen. And my sponsor, Rachel, at the time was away, every time she was out of town or something, there was this woman, Karen, that I would talk to. And so I was calling Karen, that I'd just gotten to college, the school, and I was calling Karen all the time. You know, okay, they want me to go to class. What should I do? Go to class. okay. I need to do this. Buy books. Okay, this is how you do it. I mean, just, I felt like I couldn't do anything. And I did ask for, instead of being in the dorm in the center of campus with all the people that I was with the year before, I asked for a single, so way off on you know, the outskirts of campus, and asked for different things. So I was kind of isolated in my dorm room, and I just wanted to shut myself in there, and just was so afraid of running into people. And I occasionally would run into people. They'd say, hey, we're having this party, we're doing this, why don't you come? Okay, you know, I just was so afraid of everything and everybody. But I would go to meetings, and there was one other person person in AA on campus, and he was going to meetings, but it just seemed, wow, I've been with this group of people nonstop doing things in this great, you know, fellowship, and all of a sudden it felt like it was more on me. You know, I really have to do this. And at the time, it did not feel like I had it in me. I said, you know, I don't know if I can start over. I don't know if I can just, I can do this. But I don't think on me, I would have decided, you know what, let me go home. I'm going to do that, go home. But just so happened, I was talking to this woman, Karen, all the time, and I remember one time talking to her on the phone, I'm really crazy. She said, have you eaten? No? Okay, why don't you eat something while you're talking to me? And all of a sudden, I'm eating this cup of noodles, and, you know, hearing what she's saying and eating, we can kind of feel a little bit better now. It's amazing how that works. But she was talking, and someone that she sponsored, she and I were good friends, and this girl wanted to come up and visit me. And so the girl that she sponsored came up and visited me, and she said, you are miserable up here. This is crazy. You know, what are you doing? You know, you're locking yourself in. Come on, you know, come out. She was trying to encourage me. Come to the meetings, do things. And I would go to the meetings, but I was just so afraid of going that extra mile to do what I needed to do to stay sober. And so she said, well, it was the weekend, and she said, because people, it's kind of interesting with sober, our group of sober friends have beach houses in Ocean City, Maryland, too, but they would go to the beach, and it was after they have sessions with us, it was after that, it was, say, the weekend, but some people were still going down to the beach, and she said, well, we're also 3 hours from the beach here. We could go to the beach this weekend. People are down there this weekend. Okay, let's go to see our friends from down here. And the minute we got in the car, I said, I'm not going back, never going back to school. So, and so I went to the beach, and the people there said the same thing, where you can go back and you can really try, you can get these numbers, talk to the sponsor, you know, or you can come home. I said, I'm coming home, I can't do it. And I remember some of them saying, well, you need to talk to your parents about that, you know, work it out. And my parents, I came home, you know, and, but I felt like I only did that through, you know, the person coming up, and I don't feel like I necessarily would have done it myself. But, so I came home, and I just was, wow, you know, I need to do something. So I got a job. That's where, you know, coming in with, you know, this is how you open the newspaper and look for a job. And I had no skills. Like, I had babysat. That was my only, you know, that's all I had done. I worked in my dad's office to help out there and babysat. And so I had this resume, not very much on it, and going around to places. And I ended up working in childcare. And I remember even the person saying, okay, you know, seeing the last name of, you know, my dad's office and my name at the top, is this your dad? Yes, that's the only experience I have. So, but I got a job there, and I worked there for a year, I just kind of got scooped up into AA, where I just thought, you know, I've surrendered to, you know, some of my ideas, my plans, and I'm just going to go run along with the fun and the fellowships, what I thought. And I was, like I said, I was going through steps. But I almost felt like for a long time I was just, there was so much activity and fellowship that could keep me sober for a while. And I remember about 4 years sober, I went and studied in Spain. And so just for the summer. And I remember there, once again, boom, I'm away from my home group of friends and the nice cushion. It's just easy. You know, we all go here Monday. We all go here Tuesday. All of a sudden, you know, I have to go to meetings myself and be around people and just you and me, God. There are times where I'd be walking around somewhere and I really was like, there's a reason. We need a higher power. You know, there's something more here. And so I've had a lot of things, which I almost call bottoms in sobriety, where I've had these, you know, either I'm going to grow or I'm going to go. And it's just, what's going to happen here? And it's a lot of those turning points. And so I remember going through that. And then I almost got this, you know, amazing feeling of, well, first of all, going away, I remember I had a three-week period where I just traveled around Europe by myself, just kind of backpacked and traveled around Europe. And I remember going to a city, and I felt so excited when I go to a city and I find a place to stay and get in my little meeting book and find an AA meeting and be in the meeting. I remember one time, one city, being there within 45 minutes. I got into the city, got in a place to stay, got my bags off, and gotten in the meeting. I was like, all right, you know. So it felt great. And then you'd go to a city, and all of a sudden you'd have people you knew and friends there. So it's amazing feeling where you can go anywhere, and AA is anywhere. And so you don't have to show up somewhere and be alone. And so that was wonderful. I'd go to these places, and people would say, you know, come with us. We'll give you a special tour of the city. Wow, this is amazing. You know, other people don't have this. And people across the world, I can just say a couple things going on with me, and they know exactly where I am, and they understand what's going on with me. And that was amazing for me to do that. So I remember coming home, and there was something in me where I was, wow, you know, this, I can be sober other places. Because at first I thought, you know, prison sentence, you're forced to these, you know, church-based, this is all you can do in life, and there's no other, you can't go out and do anything, you can't, you know, you have to be stuck here, and AA's just going to imprison you. And it was really the opposite, because I think back to one of my drinking days, and it wasn't that I was going, doing exotic things then, it was usually, pull the covers off, look in the mirror, I don't think I can face the day, you know, throw the covers over my head, and usually I'd have the refrigerator, a little refrigerator of alcohol. Okay, I can drink something, maybe I can face the day. That's how I was living life before I got here. So just, you know, showing up for life and doing things. I had so amazing things were happening. And then soon after I got back from Europe, I started dating my now husband, and it was wonderful because he had I've been with other people, but he was 5 years more sober than I was. I was 4 years sober at the time, so it wasn't, you know, just like, hey, well, let's just, you know, we weren't brand new, and it was it was one of those, like, let's not jump into this type of relationships. It was all these things that were completely different. I didn't know that there was a different way of doing things. I thought with, you know, with work or with relationships, there was, you know, I had my way of doing things, and this is the only way I knew. You know, you get drunk and you can be with a guy. You know, that's the only way I knew about doing things. And so now, and same thing, when I got sober, it's like, oh, well, you know, just hook up with him right away, you know, because then he might leave. And so it's realizing there's a different way to have relationships, and you can actually be friends. We've been friends for 4 years and gotten to know each other, and I thought, no, this won't work. You know, we're good friends, but I don't know if it'll work as more, you know. And I was amazing where, wow, you know, it did. We connected with more. I can have a friend and it can be more. And so I could say the magic there is the fact that we have our own programs. You know, we each practice, you know, our own programs. We have people that we sponsor, and, you know, we keep God in A first. We keep trying to say that prayer of, like, God, you know, please, we say things like, God, please keep us from ourselves. You know, as long as you, God in A, are first, then we can have wonderful things. And so we were doing, you know, things were going wonderful, and, we got married, and we actually were married 5 years before we had a little girl. And so 2 years ago, we just had a little girl. So she's 2 and a half now, and she, it's just was amazing. You know, you know, great connection. You know, just, you know, him and I and AA, and oh, this wonderful baby. And I know I had already had my judgments of, well, I'm not going to stop AA. I'm definitely not. You know, AA got our first, and, you know, this, nothing's going to get in the way of AA. But then all of a sudden, I have this crying baby who I can't just explain that to her. Sorry, AA got her first. You just stay right there. You know, so I was like, uh-oh, what do I do? You know, how do I take care of this baby and go to meetings? And so beginning, you know, they now make these car seats that, you know, snap in the car and then you take out. So I was like, I'll just bring her with me everywhere. So I was bringing her with me for the first 6 months and, you know, having her either in the meeting in the back, or I would get baby monitors where, you know, with the people I knew at the meeting, but I'd set up the baby monitor and I'd be in the back room so I could hear the meeting and then get, I can't miss the meeting. I can't miss anything. And so that's how I felt, you know, because I'm just so dedicated to AA. But then a little problem with, you know, my stubbornness, and I have to be at a meeting every single night because that's what I've done, and that's how I've been sober so far. I go to a meeting every night, and that's it. And so I had this in me, and there's no other way to stay sober. That's how I had. And my sponsor was saying, just loosen up a little bit. It's not that you have to, like, you discard AA. There's a way to stay sober and keep AA and God first, but be present for your family. And no, I don't know. So just my stubbornness would come in a lot. I don't know how I can do this, and I don't know if there's another way. And so I started, you know, going to some daytime meetings and being home at night, you know, mixing it up. And I would, little by little, and it wasn't because of that, but there was, around that time, my daughter was having trouble sleeping, which she still is not the best sleeper, but I'd say for her first 16 months, she would wake up every 2 hours or less during the night. And so she would wake up all the time, and I would be the one who would always go get her. My husband travels a lot, so, you know, it's like, well, he might travel. He can't be getting up at night. He has to work, so he can't get up. I've got to do everything, and I took that a little too far sometimes. I have to do everything, you know. I'm the martyr, and I'm the one, you know, so I just, poor me, I have to do everything. And so I just really took that on, that I'm the only one that can take care of her, and, you know, no one understands how much I go. And then you take that, and you take the tiredness, you get the halt, and very tired, and then the perception is a little bit off. You know, people really don't understand. They know what I'm going through and how hard I'm working. And they're attacking me. They're looking at me wrong, you know, just little by little. It's just creeping in, and people are out to get me. And so I just started sinking lower and lower, and I didn't see it as kind of like this low, like, kind of depression. I just felt awful about myself. And you know, people just try and give me little suggestions or point me in the right direction. And I was going to meetings, you know, pretty much every day. But everything was happening my way, and it's the only way, and it's the only way it's going to happen. And so there was a lot of surrender in there and letting go. And so, but my sponsor was, you know, stuck with me. She said, well, you're not thinking about a drink because, you know, you're practicing AA, you're doing AA, but you are miserable, so don't, you know, like, we need, something needs to change. You know, it just kind of came from that angle. I said, okay, you know, so I remember actually specifically last New Year's, that was kind of another bottom in sobriety, I feel like, where I just thought, oh no, you know, because there were really times where I thought, no one, because there was, around that time, there was certain periods where I felt like no one would really care if I had died. Like, I got to the point where I convinced myself that my parents were the only one that would care. And because my husband was sick of me because of what we've been going through, the trouble with things. My daughter was too young. She wouldn't care. You know, I was just going through this, you know, the people I sponsored, my friends, they'll get over it. You know, they have other people to work out. I just was talking everyone out of my life where, you know, it wouldn't really hurt everyone. So getting my world really small. And luckily, I didn't get away from my, something didn't have to change. So I remember my sponsor was like, 10 and 11, you know, come on, we need to do some inventory. So we just kind of got cracking, you know, starting last year. It just almost, it felt like a new surrender of, okay, this is, you know, this is life and death. You know, you could really, you know, it hurt to kill yourself, someone else, and you could drink, you know, and that, hearing that, you know, you could drink, that really, you know, scared me. So I remember coming in and just like, okay, I will, you know, turn things over. And it was a slow process. It wasn't like, you know, okay, I'm all better now. Things are wonderful. But I would say over the last year, it's amazing how, you know, if a new willingness and a new desire, you know, I need this. I desperately need this. And it's not, you know, I'm happy with my, you know, schedule of meetings, how I go to them. You know, I still pretty much get to a meeting every day, but it's, you know, sometimes a morning meeting here, and, you know, doing different things and asking, realizing that there's ways of working it out. I can ask someone to watch my daughter for this meeting, and they go to a later meeting, and they, you know, we work it out. But if I'm so closed off to there's no other solution and there's no other way it's going to work, then it doesn't work. But if I'm open to saying, you know what, I need your help, and can we work on this together? And I want to get better. I want to work on with you, and you're not the enemy. You're not against me, and we really are here for a common solution. Then all of a sudden, things start flowing better. You know, you're not looking at me wrong, and all of a sudden, things just started falling to pieces a little bit smoother. And I just have been so grateful for this. You know, it's one of those, my sponsor was saying recently, where A's there, you know, or God's there. You know, they don't go anywhere. You know, it's they're right there, and they work. But it's just sometimes we aren't the ones, you know, showing up for them and showing up for life. And so I'm glad that, you know, hey, it's there. If the tools are right there, you just need to pick them up. And so I'm so grateful that I have these, and I have people that I sponsor that will drive long distances with me and come here and just people, so people to get me out of myself and to listen to them. And that's where there is hope and there's solution here. And people like you who love Alcoholics Anonymous will show up here. And because I'd be talking to myself. but I'm very grateful to be here, and thank you for letting me come out.